If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is a beautiful Tuesday afternoon in the city of Chicago. It is not yet a tequila sunrise, but who knows? Maybe it will turn into one of those a little bit later. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Kim Gordon is in the newsroom as well. We hope to be joined by John Najarian in just a minute or so. John from CNBC to talk about, you know, the president of the Chicago Fed spoke just a few minutes ago. He's got a speech at Michigan State on interest rates, and we'll kick that around with John and some other stories as well. Some car sale figures were out. But, Kim, I mean, obviously, everyone right now is still digesting what came out of City Hall just about an hour ago.
And really big announcement.
It's well, you know, I suppose we should never be surprised by things, but it does surprise me a little bit, and it certainly seems to have surprised the superintendent. You know, he was on with Steve Cochran and said, "Yeah, the mayor's got my back." He said it yesterday. I'm feeling good.
Well, I mean, part of me thinks though that this discussion, he even the mayor reiterated, you know, said that it. The discussion with Superintendent McCarthy started on Sunday, so he may have had an idea that this was coming down the pipeline, maybe not today. Maybe the mayor felt, you know, as he was announcing this task force, this was the best time to do it, but I guess there was some discussion starting on Sunday.
Well, that's what the mayor said anyway, but
right.
From what I hear, the superintendent seemed pretty surprised by it. I mean, you could have discussion saying we're going to name this task force and all of that. I've never seen it was striking to me how effusive the mayor was in his praise of the superintendent.
Right, which made you think he felt bad about it, you know, that he thinks the superintendent did do a great job. He just felt like, you know, like he said, the superintendent became an issue rather than dealing with the issue.
Right, and so, yeah, confidence and trust and all of that. So Superintendent McCarthy is packing things up. It was in the job for, I think, about 4.5 years, and now the search for a successor to the superintendent begins, and we'll watch that. Kim Gordon in the WGN newsroom, thanks very much for that today. The Wintrust Business Lunch here, and we usually talk to John Najarian at this time, and he talks about what's going on in the markets and on Wall Street and all of that, but the only person who knows as much about the markets that I can think of as not John Najarian is probably Andrew Herman from DNA Info Chicago.
I'm not even sure where my 401k is at currently.
I'll tell you where it is. It's down in the basement. That's where it is.
That's why I don't open those envelopes. It's just bad news in there.
So, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but obviously you are. What's your title there? Isn't that managing?
I am a senior editor.
Senior editor, okay.
One of a handful.
I would imagine your staff is busy today digesting all of this as well.
Yeah, yeah. As you were saying, it really came as a big shock. It came out of nowhere, though. You know, the drums have been beating for several days now, and the political pressure has been pretty heavy. And I think the march on Michigan Avenue against the businessmen may have been somewhat of a tipping point.
Well, and the numbers came out last night, right, that the Black Friday numbers on Michigan Avenue were down by double digits, at least.
I mean, that's a one-day thing, but the image it sends out to the rest of the country that somehow Chicago is not under control, I think that might be a larger picture for the Emanuel administration, right? I mean, he's very conscious, as all big city mayors are, of people feeling confident and comfortable in coming to big cities. And when you get days and days of the kind of coverage that's come out of Chicago, it's not good. And you have sometimes you just have to do something in order to show that you're doing something.
Well, you never want to be that guy who's fired because the guy ahead of you has to do something.
I wonder if this is a good job, like among big city police chiefs, are they going, great, now Chicago's open? I mean, it pays pretty well, $260, which, you know, McCarthy was the highest paid city employee. But
you think there are cops in the minor leagues right now saying, oh, I don't want that one?
I wonder if they would look at it and go, you know, do I want to step into this? Is Mayor Emanuel the kind of person I want as my boss when the heat comes down?
Right.
I don't know the answer to that. But it's a pretty daunting job, and McCarthy worked, I got to say, he worked pretty hard at this job.
Well, I think so, and I think, you know, I always, you know, obviously Chicago has great trouble with crime in some areas of the city, you know, and but I was always sort of one of those guys who said, all right, look at the numbers compared to the 60s and the 70s. The numbers of, you know, it doesn't excuse the fact that there are too many murders. There's too much violence in the city, but it's also down. I mean, it is historically low. And sometimes that drumbeat just keeps going, and we stop and we lose focus of that.
Right, but it's just the image that came out of here, and in some neighborhoods, it really is out of control. Yeah,
yeah, right.
Overall,
right.
The city is safer.
And I don't want anything that I say to diminish that.
I know,
and that should change.
But you know, I mean, you know, you come in after a Thanksgiving weekend, and the death count is at 8. I mean, that's just unheard of.
Well, it's. I don't know that a new superintendent will change that, but hopefully things will. And the one other thing that I just want to say, because I think sometimes people think I might be a little too critical of the police department. Mm-hmm. I'm sure most of those cops who were out facing those protesters were just about as angry as at Van Dyke as anyone else. You know, he's giving them a bad name. And the fact that they stood there the way they did and took what they did in a very professional way, it was just remarkable, and a testament to McCarthy and to the rest of them, too.
I think you're right. I mean, we look back at the NATO situation,
right,
and how
right.
McCarthy kind of got control of that. There was some skirmishes, and he was kind of almost born as a public figure during NATO because he's such a forceful figure. And but, you know, as the Sun-Times said in their editorial, maybe he's played his hand, you know, that you can only be in this job for so long.
Well, 4.5 years is kind of a long job,
right.
Long tenure for a superintendent.
Very
in
long
Chicago.
For Chicago, right.
All right, well, we got that. Really, we're here to talk about much more fun things. Andrew comes from time to time to talk about openings and closings in Chicago, things that are covered in DNA Info. And in fact, it was one of the stories we did this morning. We're going to play a little ping pong, but first, let's take a break. It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Hey, look at this. Andrew Herman from DNA Info Chicago is here, as he is most Tuesdays at the normal time.
Absolutely. Ready to play.
Let's play ping pong. Mm-hmm. Come on, really? I mean, I've read about this, that ping pong is becoming the sort of the hot sport. So, you know, you got trouble right here in River City. That was not the music,
that
man, was
pool.
It? I know, that's what I mean.
P and T and rhymes with trouble.
Do we have a ping pong song?
Right, well, so we're going to have the third ping pong place downtown here. Already there's Killer Spin, and that's in the financial district over there, 135 South LaSalle, and I've walked by there in the early evenings, and it's packed with you know, traders and people who work in the banks down there. And
so, really, the idea of a ruffian at the pool hall—it's not quite. it doesn't translate.
Not on LaSalle Street. They may be rough, but they're not ruffians,
right.
I guess. Spin, which is owned by the actress Susan Sarandon, she is scheduled to open one of those this winter in Marina City, and now comes news that another one, called Bounce, is opening at 230 North Clark in the coming year. So we've got lots of different places, and we were seeing this ping pong sort of phenomenon popping up in cities, not only across the United States, but across the world. Sarandon's got a place in Toronto, Dubai.
Do you play?
You know, I it's a little like baseball with me. I'm fine except when I get the curve and then I'm
right,
out.
Right, right.
But yeah, sure. I mean, how do you get through the holidays without a ping pong
table?
We
have a table in our garage that my wife had the idea that it'll be fun for the kids in the summer. We'll put it in the driveway. And now it's like, well, once the last one graduates, we use it for a table, right, for the big parties.
Uh-huh.
Then maybe we'll get rid of it. But yeah, I used to think I was pretty good. It's interesting to me that all of these places are downtown.
Well, a lot of them are used by businesses for team building exercises.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, you can go there and you can rent a table for $30 to $50 an hour. But a lot of their business comes from businesses who are trying to, you know, get the employees to work closer together. And some of them are after hours. But some of them, I noticed on the website of, I think, Killer Spin, you rent basically a meeting room, and you have a meeting for a while, and you talk about the product or whatever the company wants to do. And then you play ping pong for a while, and then you talk some more more about the product. And I guess it's to get everybody.
So ping pong has gone corporate.
On the same level, yeah. You know, it's one of the attractions I read is that it's a low tech exercise. You know, that you don't have the machines. You're not intimidated by, you know, how does this thing work and the whole deal. I mean, it's just a table and, you know, a couple paddles and a ball.
You know, we used to have a ping pong table here at the radio station maybe 10 or 15 years ago, and it was just outside the boss's office. Uh-huh. I have no idea how it got there, but people would just stand there and play ping pong.
Well, here's the thing about those kind of sports, though. It also brings out the worst in people.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. You know?
You can get hit by a paddle, let me tell you.
Just maybe some people are a little too vigorous in trying to defeat someone else. You know, I mean, a fellow coworker. I'm not sure it always brings out the best in people, but...
We just had a little outing last week up in Lincoln Park is that Lincoln Park at the Whirly Ball?
Oh, yeah.
Right,
well, I think
on,
it's, yeah, it's Wicker
on,
Park. Yeah, it's on the edge
Webster,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a little corporate... team building, maybe? I don't know.
How was the injury list?
The injury list wasn't bad, but I kept winning, so it was a lot of
really?
Fun.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can rock climbing be a sort of a team building thing, too?
Could be. This is also a growing field in the field of exercise. First Ascent opened a huge one in Avondale at 3516 North Spalding in September. 25,000 square feet. It's got a 60-foot wall, and now they're opening one in Uptown. On Broadway, 4718 North Broadway, not quite as big, 10,000 square feet, maybe an 18-foot wall. But again, this is another growing trend.
It is growing. I was going to ask you that because I know ping pong's on the way up, but I would think the climbing walls might be on the way.
Well, they're evolving.
Okay.
When they first started building them, they thought they had to make the insides look like an actual mountain, you know?
Right.
And they ended up looking pretty gray and concrete.
Like Play-Doh, kind of.
Right. And now they are building them. If you look at the pictures on the DNA Info website of these First Ascent places, they're very colorful. You know, there's carpeting, there's colorful carpeting, the things that you use to put your feet and your hands on to grab to scale the wall. That's all very colorful. They're in different shapes now. So they too are evolving, and a lot of them, in order to keep going, are adding yoga. Evidently, that's a sort of connection. And again, they also are tapping into businesses in terms of this team building exercise.
That's Andrew Herman from DNA Info Chicago. Thanks for coming by. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Read a lot more about that at DNAinfo.com. We're going to take a quick break. Big news day today. Kim Gordon will run all of that down just around the corner. First, this from John Williams. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand in on this Tuesday afternoon. Suzanne Mushin is the co-host of The Big Payoff. It's a great podcast. You can hear it at WGN Plus. And she joins us from time to time to talk about issues of women and the workplace. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve. I'm feeling like I need my own theme music.
Oh, you do you? Well, you've got your own podcast, so why don't you have your own music for that? We can huddle on that. If you want your own music, we can work on that.
I think it might be needed.
Okay, so let's talk. There are certain things that I talk with you about that never, ever come up at any other time in my life, and one of them is Barbie. It seems to me that you and I have talked about Barbie a few times, and there's this new one, a commercial out. Is it a Moschino?
Moschino, right.
Moschino. Is that a designer or something like that?
It's a designer brand. And so from time to time, Barbie releases these special types of toys that feature particular clothes brands that I'm sure have sponsored the heck out of that Barbie.
Right. And so now we have a Moschino Barbie, and which is, I guess, significant. But what's really significant about it is that there, in addition to a couple of little girls in the commercial, there's a little boy.
A little boy. And what I love, just love, about this ad is it just folds him in like it's not a big deal. They don't shine a spotlight on him. He's just playing with the girls. And you know what, Steve? It's about time. Because the number of boys out there who are already playing with dolls, playing with their sister's dolls, happily walking around the house, unaware that there are gender issues at all, is many. Many boys, and yet we've never seen them in commercials.
Is this a marketing commercial or is this a social commercial?
It's a very good question. I think in today's world of advertising, you have to do both. because it's the way that most people today are connecting with ideas and causes is through branding and advertising. And so you see, especially around the holiday seasons, lots of ads that point to social impact, social cause ideas. Clearly, they were making a statement. So I think you can't ignore that. But I do also think that they're trying to sell this doll. And while I hate, because we've talked about it before, the Barbie idea in general, right, not to mention the fact that this particular one in real life would probably be wearing a $3,000 outfit, but I do give them a big thumbs up for putting a little boy in their ad.
Okay, so get this. I don't know if you saw this week that there's news that Reese Witherspoon's production company is going to make a movie about the origin story of Barbie. Not the fictional Barbie. No, but I guess there was a book in 2010 by a woman named Robin Gerber called Barbie and Ruth, the story of the world's most famous doll and the woman who created her. So soon that's coming to a theater near you.
I love that. And I do think that there are great origin stories. For example, there's a great one about the Girl Scouts. I think when you get behind some of these brands and see how they really got started, many of which were started by women, the American Girl story is fascinating. So I think that's great. And I trust Reese.
I can't wait to see. You do? Really? Okay, good. I can't wait to see how they...
Why?
Who are they going to cast as Barbie?
I don't know. I'm feeling like Taylor Swift would be great.
Okay.
Can she act? Maybe not.
Well, I'm just going to not say anything because I might say mean things. Let's go to the one of the issues, and maybe it was with you before. Or there's somewhere where I almost brought this up because it fascinates me. This idea of corporate board quotas. You know, most people agree that it would be good to have more women on corporate boards. It's a different point of view. It represents in different ways. Probably a good thing. And you used it as a spark, the fact that, is it Helen Zell was named the chair of the Chicago Symphony for its 125th year. So you're looking at that. And then let's move to Europe, where there are companies, or countries rather, where the government can dictate to private companies the percentage of women they need to have on their corporate boards. I think Norway's is the highest, but it's 30% in France and some other places like that.
Right.
Wow. That's unimaginable here, I would imagine.
Well, it's unfortunate that it is unimaginable.
No,
and the Helen Zell, why is it not unfortunate?
Because, I mean, mandated by law. You don't think that's a good idea, do you?
Oh, Steve.
You do think that's a good
really
idea?
Steve, this is how change happens. Do I like the fact that we need to mandate it by law? No. But do I think that changes in law, changes in policy leads to social change? What about having to buckle yourself in a car? That was a law that caused us to do that, and now behaviors change. So I'm saddened that we have to do it, but I think there is a wake-up call that's needed in this country. And to your point, it is happening in Europe already.
Well, one of the stories I read, I think it was maybe in Norway, where they've been doing it the longest, and they didn't really see much when it comes to measurable results.
Okay, well, Norway is also the country that has that television show where you watch people burning a fire for like 60 straight hours.
So you're going to want to emulate them, but if it doesn't work there, it'll be different here.
Exactly. I want to pick and choose what I can emulate about Norway.
No, honestly, Suzanne, I'm shocked that you think that we should do that legally here. I mean, I that would never, ever fly here.
Look, I would love a world in which this was happening on its own. If it were true that there were a movement, an opt-in movement, where companies were voluntarily doing this, and nonprofits and corporate boards, then I agree. We wouldn't even have to question this. But in a world where there are way too many, just pull up organizational boards on the internet and you will see a complete lack of diversity.
Okay, but I'm just trying to sort it out because you use the seatbelt analogy, and there are situations here where there have been quotas in the past. I'm thinking of maybe, the famous quota case at the University of Michigan. But in that case, you had a minority that by population sort of was suffering, was kept down, and needed access to better possibility. That's not really the case when it comes to women.
Oh, I disagree. If we believe, and the data is showing, that companies are better off when women have leadership roles.
Okay, that's different,
C-suite or on the board, it's better for everyone.
I agree, but that's different. To say that, hey, we'd all be better off if we did this is one thing, but that doesn't justify a quota. Quotas are justified by saying this population is oppressed and needs a leg up. And I just don't think
yes,
you can say that about
correct.
Women.
Oh, Steve.
Really?
Have you learned nothing from all of these segments that we do together?
I am, as James Taylor would say, gobsmacked by this. I didn't think we were going to disagree on this point.
Yeah, we're disagreeing on this point. And again, I'm not happy about it, nor do I think that it's truly going to happen anytime soon. But until we see progress on this issue, yeah, it may have to be mandated.
We have to do this again. Okay, we're going to let's give it a month or two, and then we'll arm ourselves with data and jump into it
a little bit
more, because I just I think that would be so counter to this country and private business. You would mandate a private company have a hiring quota for its board based on gender.
If I believed that two things were true, one is that the corporation and its stakeholders and its shareholders and the economic system around it would be better off. And number two, if I thought it actually would create some kind of a culture shift, a normative shift,
right?
Yes, I'd be in favor.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to talking to you about that again, because I think I agree with you when it comes to the goals, but absolutely not when it comes to the methods. Thanks for joining us. Where are you, in New York today?
I'm in New York.
Suzanne Muchen is the co-host of The Big Payoff. You should listen to it. It's at WGN Plus. All right, enjoy your time there and have a great time back.
Thanks, Steve.
Suzanne.
Okay.
We'll take a break, come back with the check of the traffic, the business, and Wall Street, all of that just around the corner here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. All right, thank you very much, Steve Alexander and Kim Gordon and Dolly McCarthy. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Giving Tuesday, right? So a lot of people talking about charities. We did our share yesterday, but I want to let you know about this Chicago Charity Challenge. It's kind of it's groundbreaking in many ways, and it takes companies from around the city, and then they compete to see which company might save or do more good for the charity of their choice. Stacy Rago is the executive director of Chicago Charity Challenge. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch, Stacy.
Thank you for having me here.
All right, how did I describe it? Why don't you do it for me? You could probably do a better job.
Oh, you did a great job. We're the first initiative that we know of that actually turns company giving into a team sport. Businesses compete throughout the year to do the most good by volunteering and raising money for a charity that they choose that affects the Chicagoland area, and the winners receive a cash grant for their nonprofits.
Okay, so I can see the competition among the companies that you know, they can just do that. But if there's a cash bonus prize, then there must be someone in addition to the companies putting up some money.
That's exactly right. We do have sponsors for our awards, including BKD, MB Financial, and Call One. They're our number one sponsors.
So they put up money in addition to maybe doing their own charity work to
Correct.
Encourage others.
Exactly.
How many companies are in it this year?
This year we have 23 companies.
And this is the second year?
This is our second year. And our companies have already raised $9 million for Chicago area charities and done over 25,000 hours of volunteer service.
Is that in total or this year?
That's just this year,
right?
In total, since we started last year, they've raised over $15 million and done over 47,000 hours of volunteer service.
Where did the idea for this come from?
This was started by Call One. Call One is a telecom company based here in Chicago. Every year they had a give back committee who chose a certain charity and decided to really focus on and do a deep dive and not only do direct volunteer service, but fundraise, serve on boards, etc., and thought that other companies could really benefit from that type of relationship that's a year-long commitment.
And so we've got companies like Starbucks, Deloitte, Quaker, Chicago names or outside
exactly.
names, but with Chicago presences, all involved in this.
Correct.
I would assume that these companies would be doing charity work anyway.
Absolutely.
So what makes this better?
Well, I think
a bunch of competitive boardroom people. Is that
absolutely, that the corporate world does respond to competition, and I think that's a really important part of it. Everybody wants to do good, but when you know that it's going to be counted towards somebody else's number, you know, and compared to somebody else's numbers, it does matter. We also provide an online tracking tool that allows companies to really quantify their giving and their employee time. That's a big plus for companies. society. So really want to measure their impact.
So these companies that are competing in this, competing, that's a fair word, right?
Absolutely.
They're not just measured by the dollars they bring in.
Correct.
How else are they measured?
We also look at their volunteer hours. We look at both what they're doing for their chosen charity and what they're doing for other nonprofits that impact Chicago.
So you can help other people and still benefit.
Absolutely.
That's
right.
Good. That's
absolutely
nice.
Absolutely. And that those volunteer hours are really important. And what we see is a lot of different levels. That's really a multi-tiered approach. We've got some people who are, you know, providing pro bono work, maybe a volunteering to do a marketing plan, something like that, and others who are doing direct service for volunteer programs that already exist.
It's called Chicago Charity Challenge, and we're talking about it now because it's the holidays when people give, right? But this is a year-round event.
Correct.
And the companies will pick their charities in the beginning of the year,
mm-hmm.
and then you start measuring them, what, in April through
we
the end
We start
of the year?
From April 1st through December 31st. The first 3 months we spend strategizing to get them in a position to all win.
Because no business can move too quickly.
That's very true.
But it's been a success.
It absolutely has been a success.
So are you going to bring this to other cities?
We certainly have looked at it, and we do see the potential of making this a national giving platform. It would be great to see the Boston Charity Challenge competing against the Chicago Charity Challenge.
And so, you know, what the heck? Just if you're in Schaumburg, create a Schaumburg Challenge, right?
Well, we do actually include all of the collar counties, both in the, you know, several of our companies are from the suburbs, and the work that they do, as long as it's in affects the Chicagoland area, that
excellent.
Counts.
Stacy Rago, the executive director of the Chicago Charity Challenge. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much. If anybody wants additional information, please go to our website, www.chicagochacha.org.
Wait a minute. It's chicagochacha.org?
Absolutely.
I guess that makes sense, doesn't it? Charity Challenge.